personally to my chair again.
I'll go ahead and call us to order this morning for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on August 5th. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next is public comment, period number one. This period is for the public to comment or address topics that are on today's agenda. Not seeing anybody moving to the mic. Recognition of Kim Benton Herzberg for years of service as an asset volunteer. Deb Shildroth.
Did she tell you got only a 2-minute speech?
I can make it quick, yes.
No, not you.
Okay. Well, with me is Kim Benton Herzberg, and Kim has been an asset volunteer for 2 full terms, which is 6 years. And as many people know, there's a lot involved with being an asset volunteer, and Kim can certainly attest to that. And she started out as a volunteer for the Department of Human Services, and then her last year she was added in as a Story County volunteer because DHS stepped back from providing volunteers for the process. So I wanted Kim to be recognized by the county. She has a human services and a social work background. She's a therapist by profession, and that really brought a lot of insight and professionalism to the process, and she participated in full at every step of the way. So, Kim, I have this plaque for you, and it says, Kim Benton Herzberg, in recognition and appreciation for 6 years of volunteer service on the Asset Board, 2008 to 2014.
Now, why don't you come up front so you can get a picture of her also there, Leanne. I want to get her out. Okay, well, we want you to come up here also, and the board will probably want to come join you in this picture so that you can throw darts at it and later on in your life. Yeah, if you're ready.
I will note that Kim said she'd be interested in the future about coming back. So.
Thanks, Kim.
It's always a positive.
We're always looking for good volunteers.
Absolutely. Okay.
Thank you, Deb. There's no minutes that are ready today, so we'll postpone those till next week. Next is consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Aye. Those have been approved. Consent agenda. Add road closure number 1510 and utility permit number 1506.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Aye. Those have been approved. Additional items. We're going to move Mike Cox up to the beginning here so he can get his presentation done, and then we'll continue with the rest. So, Mike, if you'd come on up, please.
Hi, Mike. Morning, guys.
Morning. Good morning.
Hey, this should be quick. We've got, as you know, we've been working on some trail repairs and repairs related to flooding all summer. And the latest one, this is the biggest one that we're getting ready to do, does require a bid process. And so what I'm asking today is approval to enter that bidding process. Now, this project is for trail resurfacing on the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail, not the entire section of the trail, but the damaged sections, and as well some similar trail resurfacing on the Prairie Rail Trail. Between that one's going to be primarily between Roland and McCallsburg. The Heart of Iowa Nature Trail, most of the damage there on the trail surfacing is Cambridge East, so between Cambridge and Collins.
These FEMA?
This is FEMA project, FEMA funded and approved. There is a, we did budget for it, so the matching money is already in the budget. This is a, what FEMA classifies as a large project, so they will pay essentially what the bids come in at. They'll pay their portion of the match at that.
Questions for Mike?
No. I would just move approval to authorize a solicitation of bids for the trail resurfacing portion of the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail and the Prairie Rail Trail.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there anything further? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That's been approved.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks,
okay.
Mike.
Have a good one.
Next is a discussion and consideration of the fiscal year 2015-16 Story County Priorities for Asset. Deb Shildroff.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Before you are the priorities for the asset process that will be ramping up here in about another month. And we do this every year. The funders are asked to review priorities and make any changes as necessary. One change as we go into this next asset process is that the mental health and disability funds will fall under the region as the funder. And so I'm going to be working with the regional governing board on developing those priorities for mental health and disability services. These priorities then will affect the funding that comes from Story County through local option sales tax, public health dollars, and general fund dollars. And as you review them, they look pretty familiar. That's because there aren't any changes from the previous year. And I had shared this with volunteers. And we'll be meeting with the county volunteers coming up here in another month or so just to start doing a thorough review of what to expect with the asset process this coming go-around, because we have a couple new agencies who have applied and some requests for new and expanded services. But for the record, I can go through the priorities quickly. They're not listed in any prioritized order, but we emphasize that any service that's funded by the county needs to be must be available and accessible throughout the county. Transportation and affordable housing, safety, health, and well-being of children and adults, accessible medical services to avoid out-of-home placement and institutional care, and prevention and early intervention services that help deter situations from requiring more costly services. And then in addition to the priorities, just as an FYI, I submitted a report that shows the dollars used in the asset process for fiscal year 14. Those are all through dollars that flowed through the county. Just to give you kind of a snapshot of what was utilized and then what dollars went unutilized. Any questions or comments for me?
I just had a question on utilization, and Wayne, this may be more for you, but HRDA didn't seem to access the amount I'm trying to figure out here exactly what it was. Lutheran Services of Iowa was one that I had a question on, and then HRDA was the other one in terms of accessing dollars and if that's something we need to look at. 47%, I think, is what HRDA was able to access this year.
I think it has more to do with the timing, you know, of that. But, you know, like in, the way the billing process comes and when the services actually were started and completed. And then I think there were some changes that were made the latter part of the year where there was an increase based on on need, but I can check into that a little bit more for you and get a report back to you.
Well, you know how I feel about
budgeting
and what we're actually going to spend.
Exactly.
And clearly they didn't. And then, Deb, for you, Lutheran Services of Iowa only accessing not even 30%, I think, of the dollars that we had.
Right, and I'm going to go back to Heritage just quickly first, because those they utilized all of their general fund dollars, and then what they didn't fully utilize were the local option funds. That's
countywide.
Yeah, the 1570.
And part of that has to do with shortage of drivers and having to try to go to a central pickup place and designation so that we're not having to drive from like Story City or Roland with only one person and trying to, you know, have multiple passengers. So there's some logistics have been factored in that hasn't quite been worked out yet.
Okay, super. And then for Lutheran Services, it was just on the mental health side, I believe, where they were not able to access.
Right. And keep in mind, all of the dollars through the county are drawn down on a monthly basis based on the number of units that each agency provides for the services that are funded through asset. And so Lutheran Services in Iowa, their supported community living, they were allocated $12,419. And they only used a little over 3,500. We're currently funding one person for those services, and that individual is not going to be eligible for habilitation services, which is a Medicaid program, because he's over the income guidelines for that program. So I anticipate we're going to continue funding him, but it's at he's using the units at a very minimal level. So unless we see more people that kind of fall into that similar kind of category, we'll probably continue to see where they're not fully utilizing funds. Now, one of the things, because I think I track this on an annual basis so we can kind of go back and see what the trend has been, and this will be addressed with them, and I'll make sure and address it with their liaison so they can talk to Lutheran Services in terms of maybe asking for dollars that are closer to what the utilization.
I mean, with limited resources, to me, it's so important that not only we identify what our priorities are and what the best uses are those, but that it's actually being used as we intended, because it just seems to me that those are dollars that could be freed up to assist another program or service that is, in fact, in need.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Any other questions for Deb?
I'd move approval of the FY 2015-16 Story County priorities for asset as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Aye, that's been approved. Thank you, Deb. Next, discussion and consideration of Central Iowa Community Service Board recommendations for community life services transition. Deb Shildroth.
All right. I had a PowerPoint. I tried getting it loaded up, and it looked like the file was corrupt. So, and I wanted to do that primarily for the benefit of the audience. So if you need a copy of what we're going to review, I have copies up here. And I'm going to start kind of a little bit from the beginning, and this is a similar way that this was discussed with the Regional Governing Board on July 21st. What brought us to where we are today is with the creation of the region, and part of that creation is also pooling dollars and funds with the other nine counties. There were fiscal policies that the Regional Governing Board approved about a year ago, and one of those policies was that any county-operated program after July 1st of 2014 would no longer be subsidized. And so we started taking a look at all the county-operated programs in the region. There are three, with Community Life being the largest, but Hamilton County has a program called Friends Forever. It serves about 50 to 60 clients, primarily in the supported community living and day habilitation arenas. And then Hardin County has a drop-in center, and both of those programs were moved into their respective county general funds as of July 1st of 2014. So we were looking at community life, and we thought probably the best approach to take in determining what kind of subsidization was there was by bringing in an outside party to help look at the operations and the finances and everything that's involved. Parker Dennison and Associates from Arizona came in and took a look at that the program. Susan Parker and Rusty Dennison are actually both originally from Iowa, still have roots in Iowa. They are very familiar with the mental health and disability services system in Iowa. They've been contracted by various places throughout the country to work with nonprofits, governmental entities, and private for-profit agencies that all provide some variation of behavioral health services. So very familiar with federal regulations, and then in terms of Iowa, what our system had been and the system that we're moving towards. The contract with Parker Dennison was involved the Central Iowa Community Services Regional Governing Board, and so the dollars are coming out of Mental Health and Disability Services. And Parker Dennison provided both on-site and off-site consultation. We did a lot of upfront work before they came in June, providing them all kinds of documents and with the assistance of Ron and his staff in pulling all that information together. There was a lot to provide up front. And then Parker Dennison came in June for about 2.5 days and did an on-site review, and CLP management were involved with those discussions and participated fully. There were some really tough questions to answer, but there was no hesitation with anybody's participation, and I think we provided Parker Dennison with good information in order to help them with their final report and providing recommendations moving forward. So the report came out beginning of July. That's been made available to the public. The governing board took a look at it and accepted the report at the July 21st governing board meeting. And then within the report are recommendations, and that's what you have before you are the recommendations that the governing board approved. The recommendations are taken from the Parker Dennison report. There's other than maybe a little bit of language variation, all of the intent and the substance of the recommendations is there. There's a little bit of some mixed responsibility there with some things that the region is fully responsible for. Then there are things that Story County has to make some decisions on in terms of the assets and buildings, employees, that kind of thing. Parker Dennison's recommendation was supporting the region seeking more cost-effective services. We're in such an environment right now with Medicaid being a primary funder of services, and we have more and more people that are on Medicaid and being eligible for Medicaid because of expanded Medicaid throughout the state. And so we really need to maximize the use of that funding stream. And so when Parker Dennison took a look at operations and the clientele being served and the finances, they felt that using data from fiscal year 13 and through April of 2014, so most of fiscal year 14, they came up with there's probably about $1 million to $1.5 million subsidization going towards CLP. Now, that's not to say anything is bad. It's not to say the quality of services are not of high quality. It's how this system has been put in place for many years. And there are some revenues within that still have not come through. Part of that is a cost report settlement from, I believe, fiscal year 11 or fiscal year 12 that CLP is still waiting on from the Iowa Medicaid enterprise, and a lot of providers are. So that isn't anything unusual about this situation either. And I think the total of that is about a $400,000 reimbursement that we're still waiting on, and we're trying to get some answers on when we might be receiving that. But it's – it's one of those things where business has to be done differently in order to maximize all the funding streams, yet ensure that the services are there for the clients. And so as we move through this transition, I think it's very important to assure the clients and their families that services will be here. They're not going to be expected to drop services and go without, and they're not expected to look for services on their own. We will be providing that assistance if they want to look elsewhere, but if they want to wait through the RFP process until there's a new provider or providers in place, that's our full intention then, is to make sure the service is there and people are not falling through the cracks and going without. So Parker Dennison recommended the privatization of the program, and the governing board took that a step further then and approved going through an RFP process, which we will talk about those recommendations here in a little bit. At this point in time, that's kind of just the overview. There is a timeline in the report as well, and that's just a general timeline. It lists the months and what tasks are to hopefully be accomplished each month throughout this transition period. We want to stick to that as closely as we can, knowing that we may need to have some flexibility along the way, but that's there for a guide as we go through this transition. Are there any questions or comments at this point?
I'll want to step in and piggyback on something you said. I think it is really, really important that we underscore what a great and appropriate service CLP has been for Story County these last whatever it is
25
years. And
before that, that's the 25 years since we transitioned from the county home to the resident RCFs and so forth.
It operated as it was intended to operate. It filled services that we desperately needed here in Story County. And the reality is, through no fault of CLP, the climate has just changed. I mean, the reality is the mode of operation that CLP was founded on is not workable anymore in today's funding with today's funding streams. And so I just want to make sure that we're really, really clear. This, I hope nobody takes this as a shot at CLP. That's not what it is. It's just the reality. And we've underscored, the three of us have underscored all the way through this, the number one priority has to be, and has been all the way through this, continuation of provision of services to those clients. And I'm just appreciative of the report coming through. It really has been interesting feeling the change, Wayne. So when we started talking about this 18 or 24 months ago, is that close to the right time frame? You know, it rested squarely with the Story County Board of Supervisors, and in the last 6 months or so, it has really transitioned to the regional board taking the lead at all this, and we're just really going along for the ride and getting these recommendations. But it is, I thought it was important to underscore, Deb, what you said.
Yeah, and you made one reference, and I think the board is certainly aware of it. When we originally was talking about the subsidization part from the county and looking at the total figures, I believe in an earlier conversation I may have mentioned to you, you know, there was, without receiving the cost settlement dollars of the around $400,000, which will probably, I'm sure, is factored in there, you also consider, you know, the roof replacement that was so vastly needed. It kind of skews it a little bit. But still, those were necessary expenditures and things that has to be accounted for when you look at the overall budget and how that all factors out. And I would say that in my meeting with Director Palmer and Schultz last week with ISAC staff, a discussion did come up about RCFs and different programs around the state, notably Linn County and Story County with CLP, with the Abbey Center, I believe, and some of the changes through federal regulations. but I think DHS also shared with me that they've had no issues or concerns with the operation of CLP and how it's done, and now understands not only what we're going through, but also the role that the regions will play as we look at transitioning into a more regional system. So, I mean, I think, they did come up a little over several months back. We had an opportunity to visit with DHS, so I think they were fully aware of the unique program and services that we provide. And it's unfortunate that we're just no longer able to have the type of cost settlement that is necessary to make that to remain as a viable option for a county-operated facility. Because as you notice throughout the state, there's only a very few counties that have any type of program that are county-run now. Most of them have all gone to private entities. And I think that in itself changes the whole dynamics of the market as we, move forward in delivering this service.
And I think it's a testament to CLP that even at this point that they're still a county-run and a very well-run organization. Dallas County Care Facility was closed a couple months ago.
Yeah, in January.
It was a privately run, but it was still called the Dallas County Care Facility, and they gave 30 days notice to their employees and their clients that they were going to close the doors. And we've said all along that's not something that we're going to be able to do here. And I think as unfortunate it is, and Deb, you and I and Alyssa went over and along with Ron and his staff met with some of the staff and tried to answer some questions here a couple of weeks ago, and we'll continue to answer those questions. And I think it is important that is sooner than later that we plan a meeting with the clients and their representatives, and try to answer as many questions as we can. And the rumors are going to be there. There's nothing that we're going to be able to do about that, other than counter that with some facts and let them know what our plan is. So.
Yeah, and I think you guys are both right. I think it's our staff at CLP has done an unbelievably good job in a tough situation. I have to absolutely single out Ron Christensen and the job he's done in what is undoubtedly a really, really hard situation every day. He has kept priorities straight. He's really kept working hard. He's been fortunate to have some great staff that are really pulling in the same direction. And now we've still got a few more hurdles that we've got to find a way to get over. And, again, just continue to maintain. The priority is services to clients. So not a happy day, but one that we've just got to deal with.
We jump into the recommendations then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. And they're broken out into two categories. There are general recommendations, and then there are RFP recommendations. So we'll go through the general recommendations first. And on your copy, there are some recommendations that are highlighted, and those are specific to things that Story County needs to address. And that doesn't mean those things will be addressed today, because we're just looking at this set of recommendations. There will be some more work that has to be done before decisions are made on some of these specifics.
So if it's not highlighted, it rests more with the region than with the Board of Supervisors?
Correct. There's a lot of overlap, but
okay. Overlapping.
But it's important to know that the Regional Governing Board has approved all of these to move forward.
Okay.
Okay, the first one, Central Iowa Community Services Governing Board recommends that there be ongoing service provision throughout the duration of the transition. Recommends resuming referrals of clients to the extent possible based on staffing levels. Recommends the region provide a transition management team who will work with CLP management to develop a billing and documentation compliance plan. And I'm just going to note the Regional Governing Board talked about that transition management team involving Russell Wood from Franklin County, Jill Eaton from Marshall County, and myself. We've been the three that have been most involved with the consultation portion of this, and We've met with Ron and his management staff, and we're going to continue having those kinds of communication meetings. But this will be one of the things that gets focused on. The governing board recommends developing a team that includes legal representation to address retention and storage of CLP client records in accordance to HIPAA and other legal requirements.
Who's responsible for those records? Is it Story County that's responsible for those records, or is it the region that's responsible for those records?
When we've had these discussions, it's my understanding it would be Story County.
So then I'm going to turn and I'm going to ask if our civil counsel, Jessica Reynolds, can be part of this if it's Story County that's responsible.
That would work for me.
Yeah. And Deb, you might also reference the discussion and the approval process that we took within the region regarding assisting any counties as far as understanding the role of HIPAA compliance and things of those nature, if need be. But this is an area that Alyssa has guided us through over the last few years, and she's come on board as well as our civil attorney. But I do think that there is some additional resources that we could utilize if the opportunity presents itself. So you might want to comment on that if you would.
Yeah, just a quick comment on that, and that was something I brought before the board a few weeks ago. ISAC has put together kind of a HIPAA program, and so the region has purchased 2 memberships of that program, and so that will cover handbook, in-person consultation, I believe, and then some webinar training, and we can send up to 20 employees region-wide to participate in those trainings for this first year. So we do have those additional resources available to ensure the HIPAA compliance, not only of these records, but of any other record that should be covered under HIPAA. Okay, the next recommendation, and this would be one for Story County to address, and I think we already have that address based on some information we got this morning, but the recommendation is that Story County and CLP address upcoming CARF accreditation and possible extension. CLP's CARF accreditation is due this coming March, and Ron has been diligently working with CARF on finding out if it's possible to get an extension, and he did receive some good news, and the extension will be made through June 30th of 2015. The next recommendation is that the transition completion date would be no later than June 30th of 2015. The CICS board recommends Story County develops a transition support plan for Story County employees. If the plan involves regional funding, a request will need to be considered by the CICS governing board. So this will be, again, something specific that the county will need to take a look at since the employees at CLP are county employees.
All right, is it transition support plan? Tell me exactly what we're talking about.
That could include a variety of things. It could include counseling on writing a resume, job interviewing skills. Alyssa has talked to us maybe about talking to IPERS to see if a representative would come on site to provide some IPERS counseling for people who are close to retirement or getting close to retirement. The other thing that could include would be employee assistance program if some people are needing some advice on how to get through and deal with this kind of change and a job change. We have a lot of people at CLP who have worked there for a long time, so this is a significant change for them. The other thing that it could involve, and this would be up to the board here, is whether or not there's any kind of additional financial resources provided to employees who stay on so that we can maintain a workforce basis so that the services can be provided. So it can include all of those things, and then anything else that you may think of that would be of benefit to the employees.
Other than Alyssa, who to me is a no-brainer as part of this group that would come up with recommendations to this body, who else makes sense for us to have putting together some kind of draft plan that we can discuss?
I think it would be prudent to have legal counsel available because we do have a union contract that's involved with with CLP. I know Alyssa's already reached out to some other counties in terms of going through similar kinds of situations and what they did when they had to either lay off or make changes, big changes in a county department. You know, I could certainly be involved with that in order to carry any message back to the region if additional funds are needed. It probably would help to have a board member available for consultation, because this will come back to you as a board to make a decision on.
Okay, so I hear three plus one of us. I would also add, I'd like to have either Ron or somebody that Ron designates to be part of that discussion.
Absolutely, yes.
And I really don't want to get that group much larger than five, because it gets harder and harder to actually get things done unless you guys see something else on that.
No, I think you're right. I've had some conversations with Alyssa, and if you guys don't object, I would.
That's who I think it should be. You.
Represent the board. So.
All right, so then just so I'm clear, Jessica, Alyssa, Deb, Ron, or a designee. I know we've got Ron's plate really, really full. And Paul, you'll take that. And I would suggest that we need to move on this as quickly
as
we can,
possible.
Just because our staff, I mean, not only the support that we're going to offer, but they need to know what the rest of this year looks like.
Okay. The next recommendation is Story County assesses the impact of discontinuing CLP services on other county functions and departments.
Where does that reside?
Could you give us one of the examples that you and I shared a little bit about that?
Okay. Facilities provides the maintenance and janitorial services for the RCFs and the administration buildings. So what kind of an impact will that have on the employees in the facilities department if the services are no longer there, when the services are no longer there, and those buildings are no longer the county's responsibility to maintain and clean?
All right, so Cal makes sense as part of that group looking at that. I think that Leanne Harder in her new role makes sense as part of that group looking at that. Who else would make sense as part of that group looking at that? That one. Lisa Markley would be the other one that would come to mind for me on that group, if we can ask her to be part of it. Wayne, am I missing anybody?
Again, we want to include a representative from Ron's staff, or whether he or someone designate. I think, again, these are kinds of things. They're going to be very familiar with the programs, the services that are currently there. We want to make sure that we have a clear understanding of what impact these services will have, and if there are potential overlaps, not only with other county services, but other agencies in the area.
Okay.
Okay, and then the last general recommendation is that Story County assess its own needs and or community needs for county cars, office equipment, and furnishings outside of the RCFs, and transfer ownership accordingly.
And I look at that one, Deb, and just help me through it. I believe, especially based on some of the RFP recommendations that are coming, that this is one of those items that can wait a little while. I mean, I don't see anything that says, oh, we've got to make a decision. Some of these others we've got to be moving on. This is not one that I see that we have to be moving on right away, and so I would suggest that we hold on to this one as we see what the RFP looks like, and I think then it's going to become more clear who's going to be able to utilize what is part of CLP now.
This was discussed quite a bit amongst the governing board, and I think one of the questions that, and Deb, please correct me if I misinterpreted, was that somehow in the language there could be something in the RFP based upon if a competing entity has certain needs for something of this nature, they could somewhat identify that, and then we could factor that in the process. But I do think that that's something that we're going to probably need to also move forward with, especially after we have gone forward with the transition support plan and things of that nature.
Yeah, I just see those other two. So clearly, fortunately, accreditation looks like it's been addressed. The two with employee support and how it affects our other departments, I think those need to move on their own, and they're not dependent on the RFP process. I think this one is dependent on the RFP process.
And I think that'll tie into the one before that, too, because if we have to enter into some sort of an arrangement where we retain ownership of those group homes, I want to make sure that those are maintained.
Oh, yeah, there's no question.
And that ties in directly with Cal staff, and it's the same with the administration building. If there's a need for a contractor for that administration building, and we're going to enter into some sort of a lease agreement with them, whatever the arrangement is, if it remains county property, I think it's important that the county maintains that as long as we have ownership of it. So,
and a possibility could exist that depending upon what direction it might take, that even though it may not necessarily be a county run facility, if someone else takes it over but they need those types of services, they could contract with our facilities department to provide that ongoing maintenance. I think that's a possibility that could be discussed down the road as we move forward.
Yeah, I think you guys are right. I mean, right. The real danger of Story County maintaining ownership of buildings and setting up what should be a really favorable situation for whoever's providing the services is the deferred maintenance that can go through the roof in situations like that, and you really end up costing everybody involved when you do it that way. So I think it's absolutely something we should keep our eye on.
Okay. We'll flip over to the RFP recommendations, and the Central Iowa Community Services Governing Board recommends proceeding with a request for proposal process. They recommend requiring RFP bidders to address the transition of management functions in their proposals. This may include providing assistance to current CLP management prior to June 30th of 2015. And I just have one comment I want to make on this, because we talked about this quite a bit when Parker Dennison was on site. And they feel that it's very valuable to the organization that there be what they call a soft landing. So if the new provider can step in and work side by side with the management in terms of, you know, billing and you know, personnel kinds of things, just the overall operations, it just helps in a smoother transition and a smoother handoff when the transition ends in June. So they highly recommended that. The Governing Board recommends awarding one contract for the former CLP services. This allows working with one contractor whose proposal may include subcontractors for other services and population groups. Now, we had a lot of comments on this particular recommendation at the Governing Board meeting, because we did have agencies present for that, and there are concerns about one provider stepping in and providing all of the services to all of the population groups. And there are providers out there who currently do that, but there are other providers out there who are interested in just maybe a facet of CLP and wanting just to maybe focus on a few of the services, or maybe interested in just one of the RCS versus all three. And what we said is that this doesn't deter those relationships from happening. I mean, if there's a provider who's interested in coming in and providing the mental health services and then wants to subcontract with another provider to provide the ID services, they together can form that relationship and submit their RFP based on that relationship and how they're going to provide the services. So we do know there are some concerns out there, but one of the reasons, and we talked a lot with Parker Dennison about the best way to do this, but our concern is if you start peeling away the different services and the different population groups, all of a sudden then, you know, it may be that it's a It's a provider that comes in that provides mental health services, and they want the group homes, but the people who live in the group homes, though, don't necessarily fit under the mental health diagnostic category, are going to eventually have to move, and we don't want that. Again, we go back to the statement that we made earlier in this conversation, is that we want this to be a smooth transition and for people to continue getting services. So that's one of the main reasons behind this, is to help clients continue to get the services.
So ultimately, so the RFP's out, proposals come back in, who's awarding the contract or contracts, depending on how they come back in? Any role in that, or is it the regional board?
It's my understanding that the regional board will review and go through the process and bring forth a recommendation. I think this part is pretty much going to be the governing board's role, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, the contract would be with the region. Okay. And a step kind of in between that, before it gets to the regional board, will be the regional board approved an amendment to Parker Dennison's contract. And so they will be helping us with the RFP process, providing technical assistance throughout the process and giving us guidance on that. Parker Dennison, they were clear that they weren't going to do any of the scoring of the RFP. I mean, they'll give us those tools to take a look at and stuff, but it will be up to the region and primarily this management, regional management team, to help guide that process and provide those recommendations to the governing board.
Okay. I'm trying to get clear in my mind, and maybe you can't have clarity at this point. But it's the regional board who ultimately will award the contract or contracts,
mm-hmm.
preferably contract.
Right.
But it's still going to, the property currently owned by CLP is still going to be Story County property. So if the buildings, vehicles, furnishings, things like that are available part of the RFP process, regional body's decision to make those kind of things. So ultimately, we have to have some role in this.
Yes.
Right.
And that gets down to
a couple of recommendations down
below. How the RFP is proposed to be structured is that we put in there that the RCFs stay as RCFs. They're 8 beds. They can draw down Medicaid funding. They meet that criteria of federal regulations. So we want those to continue being licensed as RCFs, and that would be then part of the negotiation piece with whoever is awarded the bid. And definitely, Rick, I understand where you're coming from. Then the Story County Board has to be involved, because if you determine that you want there to be, you know, a 2-year lease agreement and then the option to buy, or however you want to structure that, we'll need to know that so we can negotiate that out then with that particular provider.
Absolutely.
But we'll need that direction from the Story County Board.
Okay.
And that also even covers the CLP administration building. You know, the bidders will need to identify what they're going to do about administrative space and whether or not the administration building is something they would want to take on in its entirety or a portion of. One of the things that Wayne and I talked about yesterday was with some new federal interpretation of home and community-based services, and this is primarily under Medicaid, we're not sure at this point in time if the group home that's next door to the administration building, if that meets the definition of community-based. The feds could come in and say, you know, that it's a campus because it's all, we'd have to look and see how it sits on the property. Is it all one parcel, or how is that divided out? Because we certainly don't want to bring a provider in and find out then that particular group home isn't community-based because of how it sits on the property and is viewed more as a campus and part of an extension of the administration building versus a standalone like the other two group homes are. So there's some work that we have to do up front on that to determine that particular piece of property.
And Rick, and it is my firm belief that as we go through this process, that if this board has questions that would like to make sure that the region board is aware of, or that's going to be welcome. All through this process, whether we're talking about Story County or any other member county, those representatives do have an opportunity to bring forth something that they think is ultimately in the best interest of providing the service to the clients. And so I would certainly ask you and Paul as well, if you do find that there are some questions or issues, make sure that those are forwarded on to Deb, and we can make sure that they are addressed to the regional governing board. But I think you will find this group extremely willing to elicit some additional input and concerns as we move forward.
Yeah, and Wayne, I hope I've been really clear. I've been so impressed with the operation of this group, and I'm so appreciative of their assistance as we've gone through the process, where it was really our responsibility and then it's become their responsibility, and how we're working together. I have more logistical questions now than anything else of how we continue to kind of work hand in glove with it clearly being the region's responsibility to do these things, but it's still Story County assets and Story County employees that we're talking about. Just exactly how all that's going to fit together, and some of it can't be answered right now.
Right.
We just need to continue to be aware that we need to do exactly what you suggest.
Right.
We need to continue to work together and make sure that we keep that number one priority number one.
All right. The next recommendation recommends bidder has cash flow equal to 25% of annual expenses, and this can include a line of credit. In the absence of this, the bidder shall provide a plan that shows ability to meet expenses in an ongoing and consistent manner. And obviously what we're getting to here is the financial health of any bidder that is looking at providing the services.
And this is really why it's just not practical that CLP try to continue as their own private non-for-profit, because they just don't have the financial stability to do it.
The governing board recommends the three RCF properties and furnishings and the handicapped accessible vans be made available to the selected bidder at favorable terms to support the transition of services. And the last recommendation, the governing board recommends Story County determines community need for the administration building. This may be included in the RFP if bidder indicates need for space and can support it at fair market value. So whether that's on a lease agreement or purchase. And that concludes all the recommendations.
Right now, as indicated, we can't, the idea here would be for a motion to consider accepting the recommendation. Then we would set up a time and place for us to actually delve into some of these more specific things that you've already mentioned that will require us to make some decision here relatively soon. But I think in order for the RFP process to take place and move forward and stay as close to the timetable that's submitted, we would need, as part of our action today, would be to go ahead and approve the request for proposal, the RFP process, so that it could begin. And I would hope that we would be in a position to approve the recommendations that are outlined from the standpoint that this is going to give us some guidance in terms of what our next steps are. So we're kind of accepting the recommendations, knowing full well that there's a lot of things, steps that has to be taken as we move forward. Am I correct in that regard, Deb, from your standpoint? Okay.
Yeah, and Wayne, I think you're right, and with that I would move approval of the recommendations from Central Iowa Community Services.
And I would second that motion.
Motion and a second. Is there anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Aye. As this goes on, it really, especially with this vote today, really made me realize how our role as supervisors in the mental health area
has changed drastically. I can just speak from 4 years ago during the campaign process, the emphasis that it was placed on mental health and the role of the individual county supervisors. And as the discussion for regionalization came up, many supervisors were strongly in favor of it because they didn't want to have to deal with the mental health problems in their particular counties. And through regionalization, whether we wanted to or not, I think that our role is, has changed drastically and will continue to change. But I've got every ounce of faith in the regional board and the makeup of that board and the decisions they're going to make in the future. So,
well,
my 2 cents worth.
One comment, and Mr. Chair, I would just ask, you know, Ron is certainly here, and if he, you know, would like to comment on anything that he's heard presented this morning, that we provide that opportunity. But I think Supervisor Sanders certainly echoed, I think, the sentiment of the board regarding not only the leadership that's been provided, but also his management team and how they have worked with the clients and staff throughout this process. And I'm sure that we will continue to try to keep them abreast and informed as we go through. But I would like to know, you know, at least ask if Ron has any additional comments or thoughts at this point.
Morning. Thanks, Wayne. I guess I don't have a whole lot of concerns at this point that we haven't talked about over and over again. Just to go back to your point, Rick, about the 25 years that we've been around doing this, and we've done it because the Board of Supervisors supported CLP for that whole time, financially, as well as anything else that we needed. We knew the board was behind us. That's been taken out of your hands. We understand that. It's unfortunate. But when we talk about the priorities, and I appreciate the clients being the number one priority, always have been, always will be, I am not as concerned about that. I know we have staff that have been there, some of them for the whole 25 years, who are going to be there. They're going to put the clients first. I know that. And I guess I get concerned about that number two priority, which is those people. And I know you're concerned about that as well, but I just want to make sure that we're considering how we can best take care of those people and keep them there as long as we can so that we can provide the
service. And hopefully we're a step closer to that today with the group that you'll be part of, Alyssa, and really try to get some recommendations back to us sooner rather than later so that we can address that, because I even flip that around and I say priority number two directly impacts priority number one.
Absolutely.
Not only is it the right thing to do, but it helps us to on the continuation of services. And so you've been consistent all the way through this thing, Ron, and I'm really, really appreciative of it, and hopefully we can get to some solid answers for what that means sooner rather than later. I had one question, Deb, for you. You mentioned that for asset, mental health funding portion will not reside with the Board of Supervisors anymore. It will flow through the region to asset. Does that mean that the region will have a volunteer or two on asset? Have we even thought about that yet?
We have.
Okay.
And I think for this first year of the region's participation in asset, what we've talked about with the governing board is I would be the staff person for both Story County and the region, and we would use the county's volunteers in that same manner, since all but the brand new one are familiar with the agencies, the funding, that kind of thing. We'll need to take a little bit extra time to do some training, especially when the governing board approves their funding priorities. But that's how we want, I guess, because everything seems to be a transition anymore. That's how we want to transition. Yeah. And bring the regional board then into the fold of the asset process. They're very interested in it, and they are prepared to sign the 2080 agreement later this month, and start making the transition into that process.
Okay. And one final question: does this mean ultimately that the mental health dollars flowing through asset, since CLP dollars did not flow through asset, they came from the board to CLP, and the rest of the mental health dollars went through asset, does this mean that the mental health dollars flowing through asset is going to go up dramatically? Are these requests for proposals going to be ultimately through the asset process, or are they going to be separate from the asset process?
The going into, I think this through, because the bidding and the award of the new agency is going to be at about the same time that we're wrapping up the asset process, that agency will not go through the asset process for fiscal year 16, but going forward, the intent would be that they are a part of the asset
so for
process.
This year, in terms of dollars through the asset process, it'll look very similar to what it has in the past.
Yeah, if not, yeah.
But then we'll see it grow fairly dramatically ongoing.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ron, thank you again so much, man.
Okay. That'll take us down to departmental reports, the McTeam report with Deb and...
Deb and Ron. Oh, good. We get to see Deb and Ron.
Well, and this this will be the final McTeam report. It's closing out the second half of fiscal year 14. As we know, July 1st, that's the official date of the region. So we'll make this brief because we have other things to go forward on. But the number of, I usually report on appeals and contracts and then the goal progress for the last 6 months. And during the six-month period, we did not have any appeals filed. And our service provider contracts maintain at about 65. And that includes contracts outside with providers outside of Story County. Our first goal was that the McTeam would work on evaluating our service delivery system for methods and opportunities to stabilize and maximize funding. The state funding that we got in fiscal year 14 was in the form of equalization dollars and some state payment program dollars. And because we no longer had the federal share of Medicaid bills, that certainly freed up dollars in to make sure that all of our services stayed in place. And so I think we moved ahead with that as best possible way. We worked with the region on getting our 28E agreement to the Department of Human Services. It was returned to us. We made the changes. We're still waiting on whether or not those changes will be approved. We also turned in our annual budget and service plan from the region and our policies and procedures manual. That was all turned in April. All the regions had those plans returned to them with needed changes and extension dates. So now our service and budget plan are due August 1st, and our policies and procedures will be due October 1st. On March 18th and May 15th, Story County Case Management staff partnered with NAMI, Eyerly Ball, and YSS to offer presentations about integrated health home services. Integrated health home services took off on July 1st, and so we wanted to have a chance to meet with organizations and clients and families to address any questions that they might have. And then on May 5th, I gave a presentation to the Story County Bar Association on mental health and disability services redesign, and that was a very helpful conversation because a lot of those attorneys will work with representing clients who are on mental health and substance abuse commitment. So that was a good exchange of information. We continue to evaluate current service authorizations and utilization of services to make sure that people were getting the services that they needed and that the amount of units being provided met their needs. And we continue to have that evaluation process incorporated into our periodic reviews, whether that's on a quarterly basis or a semiannual basis. And then there is a change here by June. This is of 2011, but we've been tracking the number of consumers who are moving out of institutional care back into the community, primarily through the ID waiver services. And we did have one individual. It says here we didn't, but we did have one individual move out of Woodward Resource Center into a home and community-based 24-hour site. I believe she moved in like March or April. So that is going successfully for her. So we're pleased to be part of that. Our second goal is that McTeam would continue supporting a service system that addresses the needs of consumers with mental health, substance abuse, and correctional issues. Again, this is kind of tied around to our jail diversion program and looking at how we can best use existing staff to meet the needs of clients needing jail diversion services. External funding sources will continue to be researched to ensure the continuation of the jail diversion program. And shortly after this report was submitted to you as a board, we did have Ron and then Amy Peters from the jail come in and submit to you a grant for approval that went to Telegen for funding, and I don't believe we've heard anything back on that quite yet. But that is out there, and we're waiting for a response on that. Jail diversion is identified as a core plus service in the redesign legislation, and our region continues looking at how we can enhance this service, and there's still interest in making it available all throughout the region using the model that we have in place with the intensive case management.
Would the region have any interest in contracting with Story County to provide that on a region-wide basis?
I think that's an option.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, because, I mean, as you know, we've got some smaller counties in our region.
Right.
So, you know, jail population varies greatly in each of those county jails. So would it really be necessary to have a full-time person in each of those counties? Probably not. At least, you know, we could look at partnering and offering some of those services and allow them to grow so that then they can know what kind of staffing pattern is needed.
Sure. Well, and I'd just ask that you guys, Wayne, you and Deb, keep in mind the possibility we have at least foundationally a really good jail diversion program, a good model here in Story County. You know, clearly we've got a couple issues with it that we need to work through, but it may be one of those items that it makes the most sense for the region to contract with a county to provide that region-wide, and we may be in a position to offer that. I just ask that you keep it in mind as you continue those conversations.
And then the Mental Health and Criminal Justice Task Force met in February and again in June. And in June, we had invited local legislators to come and talk about things that happened during the 2014 legislative session. And Representative Heddens and Senator Kornbach were present to talk about Medicaid, the Medicaid offset, which affects the region. They talked about the Toledo Juvenile Home, and then also some anti-bullying efforts that certainly can affect some of our younger clientele. So that was a very good discussion as well. And I'll turn the last goal over to Ron, because that talks about support employment services.
Goal number three was that we would continue to work to promote supported employment among the community and providers and educate people in the community regarding supported employment. During the past year, we've worked on an employment first grant. We worked through that and worked with the people who are doing the employment first grant to increase payment, basically, for supported employment services. My understanding is that didn't really get anywhere in the legislature, but at least there's a proposal out there to improve that funding. As you know, we have decided at CLP to discontinue taking referrals for that service at this point in time, mainly over the concern that we may not have enough staff to continue to do it as we move forward. So we're not taking new referrals for that service at this point. And I think that was all I wanted to say.
Any questions? Thank you. That takes us down to community services report. Deb Shildoff.
Right. And thank you again to everybody for enduring my presence here. I have another report. Thank you.
Now you're speaking my language, Deb, when you start handing out things like this.
Right. Very good. Well, and all this report is just a count of folks going back. We try to go back 5 or 6 years and just showing the utilization of our general assistance services. So that first line there is just the number of single individuals that we have helped. That bumped up about 8.5% over last fiscal year. The number of families we assisted went up about 24% over fiscal year 13. Our number of denials went down, and number of residency denials went down a little bit, as did our folks who start the application process and then they don't return for whatever reason. That number was down. And then the number of people that we're helping through the SSI interim reimbursement program went up dramatically. You'll see that there. It's by about 300%+. Some of that are folks who may have applied a few years ago. They were denied. They didn't go through the appeal process. And so they come back to us and they want to reapply. So we put them on interim assistance to help with their rent and utilities while they're going through that process. But that just gives you a snapshot of our numbers over the last several years. So for the period that I'm reporting on today, and it's March through June of 2014, and I have the wrong date up there. The number of cases that we helped during that period for single individuals was 33. We assisted 42 family household cases, and so that brought our year-to-date up to 254 individuals. We had 302 denials that we issued during the reporting period, and then we had 23 individuals who applied but did not return during the reporting period. Our primary types of assistance include rent, utilities, and then miscellaneous, which covers meds, transportation, and burial. In rent, we paid out $19,052, utilities $4,730. And keep in mind, during this reporting period, the moratorium for LIHEAP assistance closed in April, so we did have folks that needed some help. We help with the current month's bill. We don't help with previous months, but we do have folks that come in typically after that moratorium is taken off. And then in miscellaneous, we assisted with $8,052, and that was primarily in burials. During the period, we helped, we had three individuals on the SSI interim reimbursement program. And for substance abuse services, the number served, and this would be through hospitalization, detox, going on to Mount Pleasant for longer-term treatment at the MHI. There were seven individuals that we assisted, and that brought our year-to-date total to 49 individuals. Under asset, the administrative team, we organized a presentation for agencies on a web-based program called ServicePoint. Again, this is to try and help agencies do a better job of reporting outcomes. And this is just one tool that can be used to do that. Several local agencies already use ServicePoint to report client stats and outcomes. So we made that available, and we'll continue to work with agencies who want to use that particular program. June 1st was a deadline for any new asset agency applications, and two were received. Friendship ARC, which provides 24-hour services to individuals with intellectual disabilities, and then Creative Counseling Services, which is an outpatient provider of mental health and substance abuse services. Other asset activities included contracting. We reviewed our policies and procedures, which I'll be bringing those forth here probably in September. There are some changes to that, of course. And then we also looked at the reference manual and reviewed priorities. And then the county, we have a new volunteer, of course, Michelle Hansen. She's replacing Kim Benton-Herzberg. And so we're busy guiding her through orientation and getting her on board for the process. Under mental health and disability services, our case management program served an average of 352 clients. We averaged 8 referrals, and we discharged 32 clients but admitted 7. Now, the reason for the bump in discharges is we started working with Utterly Ball and YSS on transitioning clients to the integrated health home, and we started that early, and so we were able to discharge clients. And our average caseload size per case manager remains at about 33. Let's see. We've had some staff changes during the reporting period. One case manager resigned in March to fulfill internship requirements for her master's degree, and that was Leah Damarest, who left us. And then another case manager left in May for maternity leave. She has returned, I'd like to say, and that's Anna Beeston, so we're glad that she's back. And then a third case manager left in June to pursue another job. That's Nicole Side. She ended up going back to Utterly Ball as a care coordinator. So we're still working with her because we're transitioning those cases. So that is helpful for clients because she's continuing to work with some of those that she worked when she was in our office. We've not filled the two vacant case manager positions. We're waiting to see what the need will be after we've done the IHH transition. Of course, the boards of supervisors from Franklin, Hardin, and Story counties, we signed the 28E agreement to create Central Iowa Case Management. That unit has gone into effect, and we'll also be serving Marshall County.
Who had been served by DHS.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we did have a meeting with a couple of DHS representatives in early July to talk about how referrals will be made for new clients as of July 1st. And then the DHS case managers will continue working with the existing clients,
clients
that they had as of June 30th.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then this is just language here about the regional management plan and the 28E agreement that we're still waiting on from DHS. And then the region also worked on an RFP for support employment services throughout the region, and 5 agencies responded. Included in that, and Ron alluded in our McTeam report, that CLP has stopped taking referrals for support employment services. And so we are now in contact with, I believe it's 2 agencies who have some interest in serving Story County and providing those support employment services. So the service will be there, and we're looking at having a new agency step in to provide that service sooner than later. It's going to follow a different RFP process because we want to continue that service. And since the region had already started the RFP process for support employment services, we could just piggyback on that. And that is my report.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good.
Okay, liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Yesterday I met with Deb briefly, primarily to review the recommendations that we've discussed today, and also to share with her my meeting with the ISAC team, with Director Palmer and Schultz, regarding the state of mental health and what to perhaps look forward to next year. Realizing that there was not adequate dollars set aside by the legislature in a couple areas, in one case $30 million, in another case over 60 some odd million, and so those dollars are going to have to come from somewhere, and DHS is concerned, already starting the budgeting process, looking forward to FY15 and then beyond. But the conversation certainly was very productive in my meeting with them, and I just kind of shared a couple of thoughts that Deb asked me to bring to their attention, and they seemed to be on board with recognizing the challenges that counties and regions are going to have as we move forward. And then we talked about the request that George Blitzos brought to us last week. Deb reached out to Tom Southard to just reaffirm that there was some discussion regarding the transfer of the $30,000 from the Toledo Homes. And it was our understanding that we could move forward with that for this year only, because we can't determine what the future may be beyond that. But it seems like that the Juvenile Court Services felt that the request that was brought forth was reasonable and something that I think we can do. So I've asked Deb, I didn't know whether she needed to do it or if we just needed to put it on the agenda for our next meeting to take action in moving forward with that. So that was about the gist of what we talked about.
Yeah, however it gets on there, I'd like to see that on there. And, Deb, I'd just ask if you could call George and make sure he can be here to help present that request formally where we can consider it.
One thing that we did talk about is the documentation and the reporting process that flow through the asset process is a little bit different than the City of Ames allocation. And so I think he'll just have to recognize that process is somewhat different, and we will have to continue to adhere to that. And I think you may recall that he mentioned a couple years he had discussed a proposal that was not approved, and Deb and I talked about that, and the gist of that is that Arley Ball and YSS is a subcontractor, right, on that agreement. And so he needs to work through Arley Ball in order to receive some of those funding rather than asking the county to basically step up and take that. It's not that we won't continue to take a look at it, but there is a process in place.
Absolutely.
The funds are there, so it's just that he needs to go through that process to get them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. I'll pass also. Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirement from the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. Loris Olson.
Again, Loris Olson, Ames. I'd like to go back to the discussion on the CLP recommendations, and I thought I heard that the board had created two committees, one committee to address transition plans and possibilities and assistance for the employees. The other one I heard was to deal with the county assets. Do you have an idea about who will be posting notice of those meetings for the public? Because I'm hearing two ad hoc committees got created. So
I didn't hear us take any action creating a committee. I heard us ask staff to give us recommendations. Jessica, I don't know if you heard what. First of all, we didn't take any formal action. Secondly, I don't think we created anything other than ask staff to look into some things.
Right.
I'll be happy to give a formal legal opinion to the board, and if notice is required, we'll post according to Iowa law.
Okay, great.
And following up on that, then, since I think this several months ago we went through kind of this same thing where I asked about this, and then I'd asked to be able to attend meetings when it was related to the CLP discussions, and your legal counsel had advised you that that was not a true ad hoc committee, and therefore, but I never heard back from anyone, and I think Rick and I kind of discussed this after the fact, that the two staff employees then didn't provide any kind of feedback. Can I get some feedback on what the decision is this time, please?
Yeah, I mean, it's all open, right? Anything, any decisions, first of all, comes to this board in a public meeting.
I'm sorry, Rick. It was the response to my request, can I attend? If you remember when I'd asked that back in CLP.
Yeah, I don't remember, but I think Jessica just said that she'll determine legally whether there's any committees formed and whether it's public or not, and if something needs to be posted. And I would assume it'd be easy just to let Loris know what you come up with.
I'd be happy to. Yep.
Thank you.
Announcements from the supervisors. Wayne.
Pass.
Rick. Pass. Board of Health at 2 o'clock. Don't be shy if you want to come along.
Exciting. Move adjournment.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.